Welcome to an exciting special edition of Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters, and that other fellow over there, I don't know if it's this way or that way, this is Mr. Patrick Barrett.
Hi, folks.
And the regular viewers of Cambridge Inside Out, I'm sure, are familiar with Mr. Barrett. So, but Judy's off this week because she's getting her second vaccine shot.
All right, Judy.
Yay! And hopefully I'll get my first one of these days soon. So, all right. So, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Glad to have you back.
Oh, it's really great to be back. Now, am I in my house?
You know, and I don't actually remember the last time we had you on the show, but you know, the thing is, time is working on a different scale.
Oh, yes.
During the pandemic, and many of the things, many of our presumptions have been completely turned upside down. So one thing, and we were just speaking of this earlier, is that it's actually been about a full year now, almost to the day, since the sort of the world officially became upside down.
I was thinking about it in terms of in March, we knew something was coming. And I remember very distinctly the executive director of the BID, myself, Michael Monestime.
The BID being the Central Square Business Improvement District.
Yeah, we knew that we had bad things coming. So we went out and bought hand washing stations and put them all in Central Square to get ready. And people were saying, oh, what are you guys doing? And we're like, you know, hold on. I have a series of photos from that day and like a few days after that, we just were running around scrambling, helping businesses close, explaining to businesses what was going on. I mean, honestly, I should probably write it in a journal or something like that, because it was just something I'm gonna tell my grandkids about.
Actually, I'm gonna strongly encourage you to do that, because you know, honestly, so many people's view of this entire pandemic is based on sort of daily charts and graphs, messages from Dr. Fauci and a few other wise men and women in the field. But the thing is there's, you know, and maybe some crazy news story, you know, on cable news about some violators in California, whatever. But the sort of the on the ground realities about how a business district such as Central Square, which we dearly love, somehow manages to navigate through this is actually quite a tale to tell.
It was absolutely phenomenal how our team rose to the occasion. Our ambassadors, who are essentially fearless individuals anyway, we were the only operational group in Central Square for more than 3 months, all of March, April, May, and into part of June. It was just the BID, cleaning things, making things, you know, sanitizing doorknobs, you know, doing the deep cleaning stuff that they were, you know, all paranoid about, which now is kind of like, but
right. That was not really the issue. Yes.
No, it wasn't. And I think nobody knew
though at the time.
No one knew anything. And we, you know, I'm neither right or left, as you well know, but like we had this crazy orange clown in office who was saying everything from like, it's going to be nothing to, you know, don't wear a mask to drink some Clorox. Can we put a UV light inside your body?
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I think we had just as visceral reaction, because I think it was Gavin Newsom in California who shut his state down first a few days before the 17th. And then we followed suit and everyone was screaming at Governor Baker, like, why aren't you shutting it down? And everyone, you know, I think half the population was like, why would we shut everything down? A month later, zonk.
Yeah. You know, one of the stories, I mean, I tell people more privately about it, but maybe you can share some of this. It was really the story about how property owners worked with their tenants.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously, we're all, you know, feeling the hurt from the many familiar places that are gone out of business. Mm-hmm. But there's also some have struggled through because they basically the property owners and their commercial tenants work together.
So it was a combination of things. Commercial tenants, I mean, that was scary because I have commercial properties outside of Cambridge and outside the state. So almost instantly from basically March 16th to March 17th, I went from having a fairly decent salary to going to zero. That was terrifying. Going from tenants who are paying rent to tenants who are sending me letters saying, we're not paying for at least 3 months, possibly more. And then renegotiating deals with banks, you know, fighting off a foreclosure in Illinois. That was fun. But on the flip side, on the tenant side, I remember running to Toscanini's on Rogers and First, helping Mimi close her store down and, packaging things up and, giving her copious amounts of toilet paper to put in her car because, that's what we were worried about. And then going to my residential buildings in Cambridge, in Somerville, and the first thing I did there was I ripped out all the coin slots in our laundry machines because I figured, everyone needs to clean their clothes and I want people to clean their clothes. They're not gonna be able to travel and who's gonna go to the bank and get quarters? And I left a bag of quarters on each machine. And I said, honor system, if you're not paying for it, just make sure someone can use it. Cause you still have to put the things in the machine to operate it. I remember one phone call from a tenant who was like, Patrick, I saw you here. What are you up to? And I told her what I was doing. And she got like weepy on the phone. And I did too. getting a little bit now, but like, you just didn't know. And I think, the scariest part for the bid, not to jump around here, but, 3,000 people in Central Square lost their job in a day.
Right.
I remember talking to Peter DeMiro and Catherine Carkelly. Peter's of the Dance Complex and Catherine is
Central Square Theater.
And Michael, and I broke down. I started crying.
Yeah.
I consider myself a friend of capitalism and a friend of small businesses, and to see them all crushed like a bug in an instant was.
But the thing is, it's amazing how many people rose to the occasion.
Oh yeah.
Not that I think of MIT necessarily as a sort of a typical landlord because, the pockets are a little deeper, but the fact that they waived the rents, they didn't just reduce the rents or kick a can down the road. They waived the rents for a long while.
What MIT did for their tenants was amazing. And, a lot of people couldn't afford to do that themselves, but a lot of people were in deferment. That took some negotiation with banks. But, I think the telling thing, though, is like, even though MIT did that, and they did it for all the tenants, they waived the rent entirely for restaurants in particular. Half of them in Central Square closed anyway.
Yeah.
I heard a comment last night from Jeevan Sobrina Wheeler because they tried to close restaurants again last night, saying like, they can handle it. And, I get it. He's a kid and he doesn't understand anything other than his own particular belief system. But we can't take it. They can't take it. And I've seen grown men, women, business owners break down. It's painful in a way that's like, I think the only way I could describe most, I described to Patty Nolan, it says, I feel like small businesses are being euthanized and like it's like having your head held underwater by a friend and being told, it's going to be okay. You just need to close your eyes. It's that kind of brutal. And I remember getting heated with a very lovely human being by the name of Jill Crichton. She's a doctor. She's like the mask guru. And she actually wrote some of the first guidelines to help us do takeout. And I remember she sent it to me, asking what I thought. And I was like, what do I think? I think I'm not qualified to judge your work. And I said, I sent it to the city. And, that's how we got sort of the ice crack to at least allow for takeout. But I remember snapping at her because she's like, why don't you guys turn into grocery stores? And I was like, you guys are great at doing your job, but let me do mine. I said, this is not how it works. And, if you want to understand commerce, you want to understand how small businesses operate, I'm happy to have you look under the hood, but we can't operate on zero. We can't operate on half capacity or even 75% capacity. We need to be operational. All of our businesses are underwritten a certain way. Plus all these restaurants, I don't people understand, they work on revolving credit. So when we shut down on March 17th, they all owed money from all their suppliers, all their businesses from the month ago. That's, people talk about, the chain, food chain here, but like from the dairy farmers to, the people who are selling vegetables and meats and, all these vendors just got completely screwed.
Let me ask you a little bit about, because I know that, you know, you've sort of spent, you've had to, of necessity, had to communicate pretty regularly with the city manager, and obviously Public Works Department and others, you know. So this is sort of like relationships that are sort of like honed in, you know, honed in fire between some of these parties here. You know, I mean, I remember there was, you know, there were some campaigns, you know, about it sort of as the initial sort of week reopening that was sort of where there were some banners and things put out, kind of an ad campaign that actually kind of grew out of some of the Central Square people, but it then became kind of a city thing.
So
it's Louis, a real partnership.
Louis DePasquale has more angry emails with more explicatives in it from me specifically than any human being on the planet. That he still talks to me is a testament to his leadership as well as his understanding. IDEO, the design company in Cambridge, in Central Square, reached out to us and wanted to help create what we call the Hello Again campaign. Because at that point, we were coming out of lockdown and we thought that we'd have at least some ability to operate, which we have. You know, we've, you know, since the lockdown, some things have been open and we largely have remained open. We've reduced some capacities, made some adjustments and tweaks, but that was such a team effort. The IDEO did it for free. They came, you know, with sort of hat in hand, can we help you guys? That's what's been amazing about this. You know, Starlight has been an idea in the minds of Mark Boyce Watson.
Ken Reeves. Yes.
And then more recently, Michael Monestim and myself. And we have, I mean, I've been sitting looking at this blueprint. I was on your show a year before COVID even hit. And I think I dropped a hint. I said, Starlight's coming.
Right.
And that's, years of just thinking about how to do this intervention. Not, you know, thinking that COVID can make it all happen. But when we came to Manager DePasquale, Louis, David Kale, who, like, honestly, that man does not get enough credit. You know, they took a huge, huge risk in us. Now, granted, I'd take that risk all day long, but, you know, imagine outside of COVID, the coordination and the meetings and the nonsense we'd have to go through to get something like that done.
Right. You know, it actually brings to mind sort of one thought that I've been having for a very long time. I remember speaking with people about this even last summer, which is that of all the things that sort of came about because of the difficulty of this, some things will remain, some things will persist, some good things.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain sort of inventiveness, a certain amount of flexibility. I mean, the level of outdoor dining, you know, and basically taking over portions of streets, yeah, that would have been a huge political debate that would have lasted years. And it just happened.
And it had been prior, which we didn't even broach the subject before, because even getting the de minimis patios that we have in the square, that we had in the square, you know, talks of uniformity, talks about design, talks about public space, all kind of like, we said, nope. We need this. And I remember in the summertime, you know, you have to remember, Robert, I was building a hotel. I had it shut down.
Believe me, Patrick, I know. You walked me through that hotel when it was a hollow shell, and to go into that 907 Main now and see it today, it spins my head around every single time.
Thank you. It was a challenge for my family, for myself. It still is. Like, we're not sure we're going to make it. You know, we're fighting against an immeasurable tide. But to sort of distract myself from that, I talked to the guys at Phoenix Landing. They were going to close down permanently, and they didn't want to do it because there wasn't really any consensus as to what could be done. So at that point, I was treasurer of the bid. Now I am the co-chair. I authorized the purchase of jersey barriers, tables, chairs, well in advance of getting approval for any of this. Lisa Moradi-Fuhrer, who also is
head of the license commission, the executive director of license.
Our license commissioner is also an you know, I know that people have issues with, you know, everyone has issues with the principal, but she has also done an amazing amount of heavy lifting for all of us in this process of getting red tape slashed and dashed. Like, I've made such good friends amongst city employees professionally, and gotten so much more respect for them having dealt with them in this crisis than I probably ever would have been able to achieve in normal activities. But we built all of this, and I built Cambridge's first segregated bike lane. Look at me.
That's true. You did.
And I took a picture, sent it to Joe Barr, and said, "This is what we're doing." And Joe is like, "I'll go down and inspect it." But you know, it's kind of the stuff that normally shouldn't happen. But in an emergency, we did it, and the patio was wildly successful over the summer. It helped keep. You know, just as a distinction, I've heard a few counselors chime about this notion of people before profits.
I heard that said last yesterday, and I honestly, it makes me want to retch when I hear it.
These small businesses are the people. These small businesses are the people, and none of them are making profits. If you recall, the Orange Clown had released 3 months of PPP, which is a way to pay payroll. That expired in July, and we stayed open. We kept our people employed in insurance, and we took care of them across the board. So when I hear that, you know, people before profits, I have to just assume it's out of pure ignorance and this sort of dogmatic march in what is, quite frankly, just a religious debate. And you know, I take a deep, deep offense to it, because none of these people who say these things have been in the trenches. None of them have been picking up syringes in Central Square, picking up human feces, cleaning up all the trash, setting up patios, making sure our friends and family survive. So a gigantic F you. Fleischman, I'm sorry, I know you're out there somewhere. to the people who say things like that.
Well, you know, actually, if you think about some of the ingenuity that grew of this, I mean, I don't know what the official story about the genesis of Daily Table's arrival in Central Square, but you know, I have to believe that, you know, that would be a very different commercial tenant in there, where the time's different.
So there's a couple champions for Daily Table. The first one who really deserves a lot of credit, who doesn't get mentioned at all, is
Sasha. Well, Michael, yeah.
He's a landlord.
Right.
He got a call from Michael Monestein after Michael and I had talked to Daily Table and got a sense of what they wanted to do. Sasha Papora from
Food Daily for Free. Food
for Free. And, you know, Michael listened to them. He actually traveled, and Michael's a little on the elderly side. So, you know, traveling in COVID, going to a grocery store to see their other location. Fell in love with the concept, fell in love with the idea. It was green light, go. And that's, you know, one of the functions of the bid, which is really not in our charter, but do you remember Estella Johnson?
Yes.
We desperately needed an Estella Johnson, but the bid, Michael, myself, and a few others form like Voltron to create another Estella Johnson. We reach out to our landlords and to our, you know, try to fill those, because we had a 60% vacancy rate going into the new year. And now we're almost down to like a little over 25%, which is a huge success, we feel.
Yeah, you know, I remember when the bid, there was a summer meeting, I think, when that was first established, it was the official vote. Mm-hmm. I think I made some sort of public comment to the effect of this is, I forget exactly the words I used, but I said that this is as much about sort of hope and belief as it is about sort of legislation and law. You know, the thing is that you get enough people to sort of believe in a shared future, right? Then amazing things can happen. And that's actually what I've been seeing, you know, and a lot of credit goes to people like you and Michael Monestein for working and developing the relationships with the property owners who are essential parts of the business improvement district. That's just one fabulous example with Michael Simon.
It's our dream, and the purpose of the bid is that Michael and I don't matter. That we could be run over by a semi truck tomorrow, and the bid's mission, the way it's operable, all codified in our bylaws. It is a private organization, make no mistake. continues on. And we've set the template and the framework, and the lion's share of credit goes to Michael Monestime. But, you know, we need all moving parts. I think it's funny. I've come full circle, Robert. I'm the old guy now.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So tell me where now. So I mean, I think it's amazing. It's sort of like, I liken it a bit to medical advancement done on the battlefield, you know, where things you would never possibly consider doing in like an active hospital, but out of necessity on the battlefield, you try things out and some of them work out, you know? It's been just a sort of an incredible test, and also was an inspiration for, you know, ingenuity and such. I hope so much of it actually continues. You know, for example, flexibility with the license commission is more of a guiding philosophy, you know, and not just sort of a one-off, right?
So it's not just the license commission. I think, you know, the fire department, Lieutenant Towski, has been a huge help in getting our heater program escalated and elevated. You know, the bid is lucky in that it is a private organization. We move much faster than the city. And Louis is a smart guy. He recognized that we're like 3 to 4 months ahead of them. So keeping us close as a resource, I mean, we know our district. Let us help you or guide you through it. But, you know, getting the heaters, the patios, Starlight's a big one still. We have Starlight through October. We have lots of programming planned for the summertime and into the fall. What happens after Starlight, right?
Actually, Patrick, you know, have perhaps a few minutes on what's in store. I mean, we're all hopeful that the numbers continue to trend in a good direction in terms of COVID, and that vaccinations become the rule rather than the exception. But what, for example, might we hope to see in the months to come around Central Square?
We've done a call to just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of arts organizations to begin sending us what they want to do for programming. We were fully booked last year. I mean, if you can imagine in July, like of COVID town, we did 120 shows with a 50% occupancy. This stage itself was designed for 150. And we did 120 shows, all completely packed. It's all free, but we do a ticketing through Eventbrite to keep track of who's coming in and, you know, for the purposes of contact tracing, as well as adhering to COVID rules. Per the governor's order, we are back up to 150 capacity right now. We haven't had any shows, but you know, we are planning from April through October I think we're having a child reprimanding situation over here. You're going to have everything from dance complex performances, Central Square Theater, actual theatrical performances. You'll have live music. The churches are involved as well. So we try to like think of it as like, you know, staying within our Central Square community, giving them first access, and then, you know, expanding out.
I've heard you make reference to what I think you were calling busk stops.
Yes.
As well.
So big credit goes to Nina Elena Berg, who is become as essential to the bid as anybody else. And this is her baby in terms of busking is something we want in Central Square. You know, the council has repeatedly passed policy orders to make it, you know, free, to limit licensing issues. We thought it'd be a good idea to make busk stop stages with the micro stages, essentially, not within the public way, but in ways to keep them powered and busker ready. So that if, you know, folks want to come in, they can either set up, they can do their licensing very quickly through the bid. We get them set up, get them a platform, they go. Right now we have kind of a impromptu band playing in front of Tent City, which, you know, it's funny. I think if they were bad, people would be like, but they're good. And no one really minds. And quite frankly, that's exactly what should be happening in Central Square every day. We should have
it's the Harvard Square I remember that vacated and moved to Davis. Well, yes. Harvard Square, now it's being reinvented in Central Square.
The good news about Central Square is we are cheaper, we're cooler. We have a much more diverse group of landlords, and we're very attractive to the outside world in terms of our price per square foot, the foot traffic, look and feel. It's something that can't be manufactured. And part of the bid's main focus is place keeping, not, you know, we are, I mean, I think always thought it was funny. Remember like the Red Ribbon Commission, we were talking about branding Central Square, and I was like, brand Central Square?
Just recognize
that
it.
Is the brand. What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. By the way, the Popportunity and the sort of the little kind of cubicle little startups, which I think has been really great in and around the Starlight Square area, there some of that may actually kind of move about too.
As part of Starlight, we and Michael, Matthew, Boys Watson, Anita Berg put together this thing called Popportunity. They are micro stalls, about 6x6, that we give free to people who sign up. We've had like 240 applicants for like 40 stalls. We look at this as economic development. We are giving people in the neighborhood a chance to test their business concepts, their, you know, retail or food or whatever they want to do, to go from business plan to execution to actually selling in the marketplace. And we've already now had two graduates go into real brick and mortar spaces. This is, you know, I'm no hippie, Rob, but like, I
was.
I know. I've tried to live amongst you as the the Jane Goodall that I am. But this to me is so important. You know, the small business community is a community. These are people in our neighborhood. People deserve a chance to lift themselves up.
Yeah. And
this is a way to do it.
I absolutely agree. By the way, we're going to have to close out our first segment in a moment here. No, we'll be back in like 3 minutes. That's okay. But, you know, so anyway, so we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I also like to talk a little bit about Cambridge schools and then some. So see you in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.